I'm Jacob Henson with J. Proctor Farms in Lingleville, Texas. You're listening to the latest news in Texas agriculture on Texas Ag Today.
This is Texas Ag Today, the number one source for the latest news in Texas agriculture. The largest and most experienced farm news team in the Lone Star State covers it all. From the piney woods of East Texas to the rocky ranges of the Trans-Pecos, and from the Panhandle down to the Rio Grande Valley. Here's today's top stories.
Cotton farmers receive an update on the progress of the Farm Bill. I'm Tom Nicoletti, and I'll have more on Texas Ag Today.
When severe weather situations develop, getting the earliest possible warning is critical. I'm James Hunt, and coming up on Texas Ag Today, we'll talk about the role the West Texas Mesonet plays in helping Texas High Plains residents be prepared.
The American Farm Bureau Federation is asking Congress to update reference prices. I'm Jessica Domel, and I'll have more coming up on Texas Ag Today.
Now, here's the host of Texas Ag Today, Carrie Martin.
Hello, Texas. Why don't you jump on in with me and buckle up? We're going to take a ride around the Lone Star State as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the nation, Texas agriculture. Be sure to hold on tight because it all starts right now. Ag bankers from throughout Texas were on hand in Fort Worth last week for the Texas Association of Bankers Agriculture and Rural Affairs Conference. Special Ranger Scott Williamson, Executive Director of Law Enforcement, Brand and Inspection Services for the Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association, told the group that they have a distinct advantage in working with farmers and ranchers as opposed to other industries.
The most enjoyable thing about agriculture is an integrity-based industry. But that is also sometimes the largest pitfall or danger is you are dependent on that integrity for both sides. So the risk of understanding your producer, that relationship is the foundation of these banking industries and the producers, that relationship and really being able to trust them and know their integrity and know their operation is very pivotal to the safety of the operating side. And it also greases the wheel. It actually brings down across the industry our expenses in operating and makes it more user-friendly for the producer side. So it's a win-win situation.
But Williamson warned that farmers and ranchers need to be careful about who they are doing business with.
You know, many of these bankers' first statement is that they are working with long-time producers that they trust and they have no concern. And that is wonderful. That's the way it's supposed to be. The next concern in line is who are you doing business with? Who are you buying cattle or sourcing cattle from? Who bought your cows or who did you buy cows from? Your stocker yearlings. You know, the best price is not always the best deal. You got to know who you're dealing with. You got to understand the markets and how you're trading, whether it's a basis or a cash price and what slides are. So the relationship of the industry is critical.
Another speaker at the conference was Corbett Wall of DV Auction in Amarillo. He focused on the importance of the weekly cash fed cattle market.
Basically just showing people, and especially people maybe that are in this conference that aren't used to the weekly trading in the fat cattle arena, kind of showing what the producers are up against and how important that one price is that we get.
But Wall has never been a fan of the cattle futures market, pointing to the negative reactions futures traders have had over the past 2 weeks with the avian influenza issue in dairy cattle. Texas cotton growers are watching the Farm Bill debate closely. Tom Nicoletti reports from Lubbock.
Reporting today from Plains Cotton Growers' annual meeting in Lubbock, caught up with Bart Fisher. He is co-director of the Agricultural and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M University. And Bart, you are always involved in the Farm Bill process. And what is your message to cotton farmers about the process at this point here in early 2024?
I'm positive on the outlook, but certainly there's a lot of pressure out there, not the least of which is coming off of those last 2 years and all the uncertainty around a Farm Bill that we're working on right now.
What are you hearing out of Washington an election year about progress of the Farm Bill from both the House and Senate Agriculture Committees?
In our center there in College Station, we work directly for the House and Senate Ag Committees, and so we've been covered up in work, which for me is a good sign that things are coming together. We maintain representative farms, over 90 representative farms in 30 different states, and you know, we're called on to kind of look at farm level impacts across the entire country. And for what we're talking about in this Farm Bill, you know, reference prices are the number one conversation right now, and the need to raise reference prices in light of cost of production increases over the last 5 years. And so that's where all the attention is. You know, our representative farms are key in that because it gives Congress a good sense of, okay, if they make changes to reference prices, how will that affect the farm level? And we're working with them directly on that. As you mentioned, it is an election year. We know that margins are extraordinarily tight. You know, I helped write the 14 and 18 farm bills as a member of the staff of the House Ag Committee, and I thought our 16 and 17 vote margins were tough. You know, they're down to one, but on the House side, it seems like they're in a good place to potentially mark up by Memorial Day. From there, it's a matter of how do you get it through the House. Still think it's a possibility to be able to get a farm bill done in the lame duck following the election, all the way to the president's desk before the end of the year.
That is Bart Fisher. He is co-director of the Agricultural and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M University. From Lubbock, I'm Tom Nicoletti with the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
When severe weather situations develop, getting the earliest possible warning is critical. James Hunt looks at the role the West Texas Mesonet plays in keeping High Plains residents prepared.
For Texas High Plains farmers and ranchers, information about the weather is very important. And one popular resource for that information is the West Texas Mesonet, operated by the National Wind Institute at Texas Tech University in Lubbock. But while farmers and ranchers consult the Mesonet's website routinely for information like temperatures, rainfall totals, and wind speeds, the Mesonet system also plays a key role in helping the National Weather Service get out timely warnings in severe weather situations. Wes Burgett is the operations manager for Mesonet. He explains how Mesonet's 157 weather stations help gauge the power of storms moving through the region.
Before the Mesonet started in the late 90s, there were so few weather stations out here for the National Weather Service to issue warnings. So everything was by sight. You'd have people, either emergency managers, storm chasers, to go out and say, there's the storm, it's approaching your area. But there was no estimates of wind. With a Mesonet being approximately every 25 miles, you have a data point. So if a storm, say, is southwest of Amarillo, there's probably four stations it's going to hit before it gets to Amarillo, so you know what the wind is going to be. So pretty much a lot of the Weather Service warnings now are based on Mesonet wind reports. We give them data every 5 minutes. We actually have a 1 minute observation they also get, so they know every minute what the wind is as it's approaching.
And Burgett says that wind data makes a difference in how quickly warnings are issued.
In reality, I would say at least 10 to 15 minutes extra warning time, especially on wind. Now, we don't measure hail. You really need humans to do hail, but from a wind perspective, we give them a lot of good data.
That's Wes Burgett with the West Texas Mesonet. I'm James Hunt on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
The American Farm Bureau Federation is asking Congress to update reference prices. Jessica Domel has the story.
As we await news of a new farm bill, farmers, ranchers, and agricultural organizations across the country are letting Congress know what they'd like to see in the new five-year food and farm legislation. The American Farm Bureau Federation says reference prices should be a priority in the next farm bill. They say as input prices go up and commodity prices go down, farmers rely on the reference prices in the farm safety net to help them stay in business when margins get tight. Here's Betty Resnick, AFBF economist, on the basics of reference prices.
Reference prices play an essential role in the ARC and PLC programs, which along with crop insurance and other programs make up the farm safety net. The safety net's goal is to keep farms in business during periods of low farm income, as our farmers play such an important role in both our country and the world's food security.
Resnick says statutory reference prices have not been updated since the 2014 Farm Bill over a decade ago.
The world has changed a lot since then. We've had a global pandemic. We've had record fertilizer prices. We've had massive supply chain issues due to global conflicts and other factors, and some of the worst inflation we've seen in many people's lifetimes. The cost of production of agriculture has also steeply increased with these changes. For some of the crops in the program, costs have increased upwards of 40% or more since introduction. And that's after prices have kind of settled back down over the past few years.
According to AFBF, there are several ways to raise reference prices, but the organization has not advocated for one specific fix.
We at the American Farm Bureau are advocating for an increase in reference prices for all crops, but leave the specifics of that to our legislators on Capitol Hill. But we do need a farm bill, and we are eagerly awaiting their plans.
That was Betty Resnick from the American Farm Bureau Federation. The current farm bill expired last year, and we are currently operating under a single-year extension of that farm bill. The extension expires at the end of September. House Agriculture Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson has told reporters we can expect to see their draft version of the farm bill in the coming weeks. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Dolmel.
Things are green and growing around the coastal bend area of South Texas. This is Harvey Buring reporting from the Corpus Christi area.
And many veterinarians believe the drug dexamethasone can decrease a horse's response to vaccination. Veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd has more on that coming up.
These stories plus a look at the markets are straight ahead on Texas Ag Today.
Wildfires have devastated Texas ranches, burning millions of acres of rangeland, destroying buildings and fences, and killing thousands of cattle. You can help by donating to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Go to texasfarmbureau.org and click the red Wildfire Relief Fund button at the top of the page. 100% of every dollar you donate will go directly to a Texas rancher to help them rebuild. Go to texasfarmbureau.org to donate.
He always wanted to be a rodeo clown, but he had to settle for being a radio clown. Here's Kerry Martin with more Texas Ag Today.
Things are green and growing around the coastal bend area of South Texas. Harvey Buring has this update from Corpus Christi.
Well, as April arrived, the Coastal Bend farmers and ranchers are pleased to see how well their spring crops and pasture land is growing. Farmers here in the Coastal Bend got an early start this planting season. Moisture and soil temperatures were ideal in February, and many jumped in planting corn earlier and continued immediately with sorghum, followed by cotton planting. No weather interruptions occurred this year, so for many, that planting process completed anywhere from a week to 10 days earlier than usual. Currently, corn is up to a height of some 8 to 12 inches, and grain sorghum not far behind. Those cotton crops that were planted later are up in most of the fields to a good stand, and many of the growers did have to run their rotary hose to reduce the wind blowing sand to those tender young plants. But all in all, cotton off to a little slower start, but a good start anyway. Now, many ranchers have certainly been encouraged by this strong cattle market, and they're moving calves into the sale barns at a little lighter weight this year to capitalize on those good prices, give their cows a rest. And despite the fact that the pasture land is growing and productive, they're willing to sell those calves a bit earlier than in many years. Now, here in the Coastal Bend, things are definitely green and growing, but another rain is certainly going to be needed by mid-April to keep our crop up and running in such a great condition.
Reporting for Texas Ag Today from the Coastal Bend area, this has been Harvey Buring.
Many veterinarians believe the drug dexamethasone can decrease a horse's response to vaccination. Dr. Bob Judd says there was a recent study on the issue.
Dexamethasone is a form of cortisone that is used in horses for multiple purposes, but allergy is the most common use. Since all corticosteroids can theoretically decrease the animal's immunity, a study was performed at the University of California, Davis, to determine the antibody response to equine herpes virus vaccine and equine influenza virus vaccine at the same time as administration of dexamethasone. The study involved 55 adult horses, and one group did not receive any medication, one group received the vaccine only, one group received the vaccine in one dose of 20 milligrams dexamethasone, and one group received the vaccines in 3 days of 20 milligram dexamethasone. Results indicated that the horses that only received the vaccine had a good response with an increase in antibody titer and an increase in SAA value, which indicates an increase in inflammation. The group that received only one injection of dexamethasone along with the vaccines, as well as the horses that received 3 injections of dexamethasone, did not have a decreased antibody titer of equine herpes virus 1 or equine influenza. The only effect noted of the dexamethasone-treated cases was a decrease in inflammation after the injection. Using dexamethasone at the same time as vaccination is not common, but there are times when administering the drug is needed, and giving the drug at the same time as vaccine saves time and money. This will save the horse owner some money, especially if the veterinarian has to drive to the farm, as this would save a farm call. So it appears administering dexamethasone at the time of equine herpes virus 1 vaccine and equine influenza vaccine does not decrease response to the vaccine. I'm Dr. Bob Judd. This is the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
We'll check the markets coming up next on Texas Ag Today.
Catastrophic wildfires have scorched over 1 million acres in the Texas Panhandle. Homes, barns, fences, and livestock have been lost. You can help farmers and ranchers who have been affected by these fires by donating to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. 100% of all donations received go directly to farmers and ranchers impacted by these fires. To make a tax-deductible donation, go to texasfarmbureau.org and click the red Wildfire Relief Fund button at the top of the page.
Here's the latest market information on Texas Ag Today.
Let's take a look back at how the markets wrapped up on Monday. We finished higher in the live cattle futures market, mostly lower on feeder cattle. April live cattle up $1.15, 179.40. June up $1.27, 173.32. With August live cattle up 92 cents, 170.90. Feeder cattle lower on all except the nearby April. Of course, that's a lightly traded contract now. It was up $1.60, 239.30. May down $1, 237.17. With August down 37, 248.25. Cash-fed cattle wrapping up the sales last week here in Texas, selling cattle mostly at 184. That is $2 lower compared to the previous week. In the Northern Plains, we saw live sales mainly 187, dress sales at 297, those prices $1 to $2 lower. Boxed beef took a big jump with choice up 459, 301.76, select up 678 at 301.48. Now let's check those auction barns. We're walking the pens with Larry Marble.
Jody Fry, producers in Cargill, San Angelo, how'd you sell cattle on Thursday?
Better quality steers, 400 to 600 pounds from 250 all the way up to a height of near 350. Most of them in that weight range kind of from 260 to 310. Better quality heifer kids, 400 to 600 pounds from 220 all the way up to a height of near 320, mostly 245 to 285. Starter cows, average to high yielding, 95 to 117. Still some of those highest yielding starter cows, 118 all the way up to a high of 140. Thin or very low yielding cows, including some of the longhorn cows, just a few of those today from 70 to 90. Starter bulls, average to high yielding, 115 to 140. A few of the highest yielding starter bulls from 142 all the way up to a high of 166. Cow-calf pairs, just a few single middle-aged to older pairs today from 1575 to 2250.
What do we got coming next week?
We'll have a sheep and goat sale, and I've just got a gut feeling. I've been wrong many times before, but I think it could roll into a two-day sale. I actually know of some bigger deals of lambs trading now and over the weekend. Seems like when somebody starts working sheep, the next one follows suit. Cattle sale, we know of a couple loads of 5 and 6 year old Angus cows represented as nice cows. Part of them will be pairs, part of them will be breeds. Next Thursday should bounce back and have a better cattle sale. I'd expect maybe 750 to 800 head next Thursday.
Jody Fry, producers in Cargyle, tell everybody how to contact y'all.
325-653-3371. That's the office number. 234-7895 would be my mobile.
Jody, we appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
And neighbor, of course, we thank you, too, for stopping in today for this edition of Walking the Pens, Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, every Monday through Friday. That was Jody Fry. I'm Larry Marble. You're my neighbor. Neighbor, good day to you.
Thanks, Larry. Back over to the futures market now, where lean hogs finished higher. April hogs up 42 cents, 89.75. May contract up 32, 97.87. Class 3 milk higher. Nearby April milk up 7, 15.64 a hundredweight, with May milk up 32, 16.73 a hundred. Cotton was mixed. Old crop finished higher, new crop lower. Most of the session centered around growers selling and speculators liquidating their positions. We close with May cotton up 40 points, 86.65. July up 57, 88.39. New crop December cotton down 11, 82.54 cents. Corn continues to trade in a sideways pattern. We've seen that for several weeks now. Not much movement. May corn up 1 1/4, 435.5. July corn up 3/4, 447.5. With September corn up 1/4 penny, 457.25. The wheat complex was mixed. Hard wheat finished higher. Soft wheat was lower. We'll start with the Kansas City wheat. May contract up 3 cents, 585.25. New crop July up 5, 584.5. Soft wheat, Chicago, with May contract down 1.5, 565.75. July down 1.25, 580.5. In the energy markets, May natural gas was up 5 cents at $1.84. May West Texas crude down 23 at $86.68 a barrel. The financial markets narrowly mixed, with the Dow down 1 point, 38,902. The NASDAQ up 15, 16,264. The S&P up 1, 5,205. That wraps up our look at the markets, and that wraps up this episode of Texas Ag Today. I'm Kerry Martin. Hope to see you back here next time as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the U.S. of A, Texas agriculture.
Thanks for joining us for Texas Ag Today. Be sure to follow the Texas Ag Today podcast, found wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Texas farm and ranch news, check out our website at texasfarmbureau.org or tfbradio.com. Texas Ag Today is a production of the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.